resting upon her shoulders. You're going to be okay.
I really like you,
Katie said, and then hiccuped. She brought her face in close to Cassidy's, and Cassidy knew she couldn't kiss her. She was disgusted with herself for wanting to, for the momentary deliberation. Then Katie's face changed.
You okay?
Cassidy asked. Katie bolted for the bathroom and made it to the toilet just in time. Christ. Cassidy had to look away. What the hell was she doing here? She went to the kitchen to get Katie a glass of water and was taken aback all over again by the overturned liquor bottles littering the counter and kitchen table. She would have mistaken it all for a Labor Day party's aftermath if she didn't know better. Against her better judgment, she opened the fridge. It was empty of food, as she expected, but at least it wasn't stockpiled with booze. Closing the door, she noticed a few faded photos stuck with magnets to its front. Cassidy reached for the most adorable of the bunch, a photo of Katie as a little girl perched upon a horse. She looked like a real-life American Girl doll. Big blue eyes, shiny blonde braid, complete with mini equestrian outfit and tiny riding helmet. Beside that was a family photo, the posed kind, where everyone was in color-coordinated outfits. Katie and her mother were in dresses. Her father and two brothers were in ties. Katie was the youngest, and she couldn't have been a day over 15 when this was taken, but without a hint of the pubescent awkwardness that Cassidy had suffered at that age. They were a handsome, wholesome group, the father hulking over the rest of them like a good-natured bear, the mother with a hint of protective concern behind her stiff smile, a wiliness to the brothers, who were close in age and no doubt sportsmen. They were a regular family in the way that triggered Cassidy's basest resentments. She couldn't help but be suspicious of any group that fits so seamlessly in this world, at least on the surface. It wasn't cool, and certainly not PC, to admit that the sight of Katie's brothers sent a chill up Cassidy's spine. They stirred in her a volatile mixture of fear and aggression. These boys-will-be-boys kind of men. She could almost see the other photos in a family album somewhere, of the two of them bullet-belted, toting rifles, flashing huge grins over some enormous dead animal. They were the kind of guys Cassidy would cross the street to avoid because her intolerance of them was palpable, yes, but also in fear they'd attack her for sport, too, if she came too close. Another photo on the fridge was of Katie arm-in-arm with a group of girls, all wearing college sweatshirts. Some of the sweatshirts were bright orange and read University of Tennessee. Others read University of Hard Knocks. They were sweatshirts that brandished Greek letters or a red and yellow crest. Katie's was gray with burgundy lettering. Chi Omega since 1895. Cassidy stepped back to take in the group as a whole. So much blonde hair and fair skin and light eyes. Perfect-looking girls with perfect little lives. Farther down the fridge door, Cassidy found a more recent photo of what had to be Katie and her ex-fiancé. They were dressed in formal attire, probably at someone's wedding. She looked happy, Katie did. He looked like a dipshit, so normal it was nauseating. But Katie seemed to really like him, at least in this picture. Cassidy turned away from the photos then, and without thinking, she began tidying up. She gathered the empty, overturned liquor bottles on the counter into a garbage bag and piled a few sticky mugs into the sink. She checked the coffee maker, chucked out the old filter, and filled a fresh one with a container of Folgers beside the machine. Cassidy didn't even know this girl. Why did she care if she had coffee in the morning? Why was she drawn to this mess? In the cabinet, Cassidy found a clean glass and filled it with water. She walked it to the bedroom, where she found Katie face down on her mattress.
Katie?
she said from the doorway. She could at least tell Katie was breathing by the slight rise and fall of her black bra and underwear. As she stepped closer to set the glass of water onto the nightstand, she could also hear her snoring. Cassidy thought to cover her with a blanket, but was too afraid to touch her. Instead, she checked to make sure Katie's alarm clock was set, and then quietly made her escape. Headphones on, music blaring, Cassidy tried to shake off all the memories of the previous night. She upped her speed and her treadmill's incline to physically run them out of her mind. She could not go into work distracted today. She had to be business as usual. Get in, close the steel, and get out. Then Katie Daniels would be a thing of the past. She would likely never see her again. Cassidy imagined herself later that night, joking about it over drinks with Gina and Becky. Dahlia would reenact how she had to come out from behind the bar to help drag the straight girl shit show out to the curb. Someone would no doubt ask, "Did you hook up with her?" "Yeah," she'd reply sarcastically, "because I'm a date rapist. Of course I didn't hook up with her." "But are you going to see her again?" "God, no," Cassidy would say. "Once was more than enough." She pictured how they'd laugh at this part, how she'd buy everyone around, and that would be that. So why the hell was she running, literally sprinting, at twice the normal speed this morning? Like she wanted her heart to burst from her chest. Those photos on Katie's refrigerator door had gotten to her. They'd stirred a strange and familiar longing. Cassidy had woken up thinking of Monica, of the first time they lay together with their hips touching, legs entwined, and how afterward they smoked a cigarette like they'd seen couples do in the movies, but pretended nothing unusual had just gone on. It was a well-worn memory that came to Cassidy only in moments of weakness, unfurling against her will to all that followed. How junior year, Monica started dating Noah Cooper. Now senior year, Cassidy found herself in the sickening position of documenter at pre-prom pictures. After all these years and countless women, innumerable humiliations erased and conquered, this one persisted, harbored malevolently in the walls of Cassidy's mind like a haunting.
"You're going to come see us off, aren't you?" Monica had said. "You have to come. You always take the best pictures of me."
It was true that Cassidy had been incapable of taking a bad photo of Monica, because for Cassidy, taking a photo of Monica was a flash of perfection. It was Monica's shape and form suspended in place, where she came back in an hour to check. This Monica would remain exactly as she was, still smiling back at her as proof of something. Monica's prom dress was rose quartz. Cassidy would never forget it. It was a color she'd had difficulty visualizing when Monica described it. But seeing it on Monica that afternoon, Cassidy understood how it wasn't simply pink, as she'd suspected. It was in fact the exact hue of a crystallized gemstone transmitting a pale pink light. After watching their limo drive away, Cassidy walked home in the opposite direction, hands dug deep into her jeans pockets, head down.
"Are you sorry now?"
her mother had said when she arrived home.
"Are you sorry you're not going? Now that you saw how nice everyone looked and how happy they all were?"
Cassidy slowed her treadmill's pace and reduced her incline before she actually did have a heart attack. She wiped the sweat from her face with her towel. "Shake it off," she told herself. "Shake it off. Stay present. Focus on the task at hand." "But are you going to see her again?" "God, no," she would say. "Once was more than enough." Chapter 5. Katie woke up to her head blaring like an ambulance, and her mouth as dry as week-old bread. There was a full glass of water on her nightstand, and she chugged it down, then got herself into the shower. What had she done? And worse, how was she supposed to face Cassidy now, all day long, with her Falcon cannot agree to that bullshit? Katie stepped out of the shower, needing coffee so badly she could almost smell it. No, wait, she was definitely smelling it. This was no hallucination, but how was that possible? Sure enough, her coffee maker had prepared her a steaming 4-cup pot. So whether she had set up the machine and set its timer in a blackout, unlikely, or Cassidy had done it before leaving last night. It was an act of heartfelt thoughtfulness that made having to go head-to-head with her this morning slightly less mortifying, but only slightly. Katie drank her first cup of coffee while digging through the hallway closet just outside her bathroom, which she believed was intended to be a linen closet, but in an apartment this small was more like a linen closet slash medicine cabinet slash storage cupboard. It contained every household item that couldn't fit anywhere else. Bath towels, dish towels, toilet paper, random appliances she'd purchased on a whim and used only once, like a salad spinner. Katie was searching for antacid, but wouldn't you know it, she found an iron. It would have been awesome if she'd stumbled upon it yesterday, but she was not about to look a gift iron in the mouth. Katie kicked a few boxes from the center of the living room floor in order to lay down a towel and iron her black skirt suit. It was a different black skirt suit from yesterday, but only if you looked closely. She'd wear it with a cream-colored blouse today instead of white. While ironing her suit to perfection, she tried to recall how exactly she had gone from screwing up Cassidy's Megatouch game last night to ending up with her here at her apartment. And why in the world did she take off her dress? She dragged an IKEA chair from the kitchen into her bedroom, then slid her nightstand in front of the mirror to construct a makeshift vanity. It was not quite the handcrafted, beveled glass makeup nook she'd grown accustomed to in Soho, but it would do. With her face nearly knocking into the mirror, Katie applied a yellow-tinted concealer to the dark circles under her eyes, and then lined them with a neutral pencil to counteract their redness. Her face was coming together, but Cassidy Price had still seen her in nothing but her underwear. This fact was undeniable. Katie had never before been met with the predicament of heading into a negotiation where opposing counsel knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that her belly button was an innie, but she was fairly certain it put her at a disadvantage. When she arrived at the Falcon Capital building, she stepped out of her cab and locked eyes with Cassidy, who was, of course, stepping out of the car directly in front of hers. Katie forced herself to hold Cassidy's gaze. She could not succumb to the shame. "Hey," she said, immediately realizing how flippant it came out sounding. "Good," she thought. "Go with that." She brought even more levity to her voice. "Did you set my coffee maker last night?" For whatever reason, Katie's posing this question caused Cassidy to blush. "Yeah," she said, like it was no big deal. "That was very nice of you." Katie chuckled. "I have to say, no man would have done that." Cassidy laughed uncomfortably, and then gestured to the building's front door. "Shall we?" Katie let Cassidy hold the door open for her, and they rode the elevator together in total silence. Katie swore she could smell wild turkey emitting from her pores, but willed herself to ignore it. She told herself that Cassidy should be just as embarrassed as she was right now, because Cassidy was the one spending her nights fucking 22-year-olds in a filthy girl bar bathroom. What would Falcon think about that? Katie doubted very much Falcon would agree to that. The two of them entered the conference room and separated to opposite sides of the table.
"Let's get started," Katie's boss said. "We have a lot to cover if we want to close today."
They proceeded much the same way as the day before. "We want this, but they want this. You claim this, but they think this. Yada, yada, yada." Katie and Cassidy were seated across from each other, just as they had been yesterday, But today, instead of trying to imagine Cassidy's life, Katie was straining to push it out of her mind. She didn't want to have a mental picture of Cassidy searching and pecking through a game of erotic photo hunt, or of her ragtag group of friends, or, worst of all, her ranking on the best fucks list. In fact, Katie had to question Ms. Price's judgment for allowing her to see all of that. Why would someone who relied so heavily on intimidation in the boardroom, aggressive eye contact, and a $300 haircut, give her such an unadulterated view of her underside? As they negotiated back and forth, Cassidy's recurring "Falcon cannot agree to that" sounded less maddening to Katie's ears. Not quite so brash or arrogant. And in spite of Katie's throbbing head and nausea, she was on top of her legal game. So much so that she believed it was clear to everyone at the table that the power balance had shifted in her team's direction. Perhaps having Cassidy see her in her underwear last night had put her at the disadvantage instead of Katie. Even so, when the deal was done, miraculously by around 8 p.m. that night, Katie made a quick round of handshakes before dashing to the ladies' room, where she planned to hide until Cassidy went home. That's where Cassidy found her, leaning against the sink, gazing at her own shame-faced reflection.
"I thought you might be in here," Cassidy said.
Katie pretended like she needed to wash her hands.
"Good work today," Cassidy said.
"Thanks." Katie used way more soap than necessary and took her sweet time scrubbing each finger individually in hopes that Cassidy would head into a stall, allowing her to make her escape. But Cassidy stayed put. Katie turned off the faucet and shook out her hands because it was inconceivable that she could continue washing them any longer. Then she pivoted away from Cassidy to reach for 1, 2, 3 paper towels. While Cassidy watched her thoroughly dry her hands, Katie thought maybe she was just bad at goodbyes. Their deal was done. This would likely be the last time they'd ever see each other. Maybe on account of the craziness of last night, Cassidy felt like she owed Katie a friendlier farewell than the abrupt handshake they'd already exchanged. But as far as Katie was concerned, they'd spent more than enough time on this tête-à-tête. It was time to end this. Katie picked up her purse and her briefcase from where she'd set them down on the window's ledge. "Look," she said, "I'm sorry about last night. I'm not usually such a hot mess. I just got out of a bad breakup and I was feeling..."
"It's cool. You don't have to apologize."
Cassidy was looking every which way now. Every which way except right at Katie.
"You were loads of fun last night. You made yourself many fans."
"Okay, then," Katie was about to say, when Cassidy shocked her by asking,
"Do you want to grab some dinner?"
"I can't," Katie reflexively shot back. "I have plans." Which was a lie. She was in fact starving and dreading going back to her empty apartment alone.
"Well, let me give you my number."
Cassidy took out her phone. "Oh, no," Katie said. I won't. Cassidy halted, then put her phone back into her suit pocket. She scratched at the back of her neck.
"At least take this."
Cassidy pulled out a business card.
"My cell's on there if..."
Katie took the card from Cassidy's fingers, but didn't give it so much as a glance. She didn't offer her one of hers. Cassidy backed off then, finally, and turned to leave without saying goodbye.
"Take care,"
Katie said, as the bathroom door swung soundlessly closed behind her. Katie knew she had hurt Cassidy's feelings, but that was just too frigging bad. Better than giving her the wrong idea. What did she think Katie was? Just because she got a little drunk and made a fool of herself. Then the bathroom door swung back open, and Cassidy reappeared.
"You know, I'm not hitting on you," she said. "You don't have to be such a snob. It's just dinner."
Katie was stunned for a second by Cassidy's forwardness. She said, "I'm not a snob. You are."
"Very mature."
Cassidy smiled. "Fine," Katie said. "I could use some dinner."
"Where to?"
Chapter 6. The moment their waitress set down a plate of complimentary pâté, Cassidy knew she was doomed. She'd accepted that there was a chance Raquel would be in the kitchen tonight, but she chanced it because this restaurant was the ideal place to take Katie for dinner. It had just the right atmosphere for them to sit and have a nice meal and partake in meaningful conversation, a perfect balance of edge and intimacy. Some might have called it the ideal date restaurant, unless, like Cassidy, he'd slept with the chef for a few weeks, then promptly stopped answering her texts when she broke up with her girlfriend to be with you.
"The chef here is a friend," Cassidy said, an explanation for the free pâté.
A moment later, Raquel appeared wearing checkered chef pants and a black skullcap over her asymmetrical bangs. She set down an artistically arranged beet salad and then gave Katie a pointed once-over. Katie returned the favor, observing Raquel's pierced labret and tattooed forearms.
"Hi."
Raquel extended her hand to Katie.
"I'm Raquel."
"Hello," Katie said. "Nice to meet you."
"You ladies here for dinner?"
she asked.
"Yeah," Cassidy said. "I was thinking..."
Raquel cut her off.
"I've got you. I know what you like, Cassidy."
Raquel shot a malevolent glance at Katie and then raised her eyebrows at Cassidy.
"You want it raw tonight?"
Before Cassidy could get a word out, Raquel turned back toward the kitchen. Over her shoulder, she said loud enough for the whole place to hear,
"I hope your friend eats fish!"
Cassidy cleared her throat.
"Just to clarify, she was referring to the crudo. The raw..."
Katie held up her hand to make Cassidy stop talking. The wine they ordered arrived, and Cassidy was thankful to have hers. She took a long sip.
"Let me guess," Katie said. "You used to date Chef Raquel."
Cassidy tapped at the side of her wine glass.
"Date is a strong word."
"Not really."
"It's more like we've shared a few special moments."
"I see. So, should I worry about the pâté being poisoned?"
"Maybe you should let me taste it first."
Cassidy dug into the pâté then, and scooped them each some beet salad.
"She's a friend of Becky's. That's how I know her."
One bite of beets and Cassidy's head spun. She was hungrier than she'd realized.
"I had no idea there were so many lesbian chefs in this town."
Katie seemed to choke on the word lesbian, but she tried to save it by adding, "I'm kind of fascinated by your life. You seem to really know how to have a good time."
"If last night was any indication," Cassidy said, "you do have some idea of how to let your hair down."
"Please don't bring up last night ever again."
"Sorry. Didn't mean to make light of it."
Cassidy jumped at the opportunity to steer the conversation away from herself.
"It seems like you're going through a rough time, with your breakup and all."
Katie nodded.
"I think last night at the bar I was trying to feel like somebody else. For once in my life to be completely careless and carefree."
"Hear, hear."
Cassidy raised her glass.
"Careless and carefree happens to be my specialty. See? We are meant to be friends."
Katie pushed some beets around her plate with her fork. Her face was opalescent in the light from their table's flickering candle. Cassidy was breaking her own rules, contradicting herself by just being here. She was supposed to bid Katie goodbye today, and instead they were sitting across from a table together, alone, and she was leaning too far forward, hopped up and overeager. They were interrupted then by a special delivery from the kitchen, an enormous two-tiered plate of oysters, mussels, clams, shrimp, and tuna tartare.
Wow, Katie said. Raquel was not messing around. There is a whole lot of raw, vaguely vaginic seafood before us.
Cassidy squeezed some lemon onto an oyster and slurped it down.
I'm pretty sure vaginic isn't a word.
It's not?
Katie went for a shrimp, probably because it was less suggestive.
Well, it should be.
It had been hours since either of them had eaten, and together they ravaged that plate. Cassidy watched Katie, hungry as she was, lost in the reverie of juice, flavor, wine. Behind Katie, a wall was painted with quotations from Ernest Hemingway, Henry Miller, and F. Scott Fitzgerald. Sentimental declarations on food, enjoyment, sucking the marrow. The kind of thing Cassidy would normally scoff at as trying too hard, but tonight they struck her as a seamless backdrop to Katie's iridescence.
Katie leaned across the table and brought her voice down like she had a secret. Can I ask you something personal?
Cassidy waited, sensing they were on the brink of something.
Were you always this way?
Cassidy paused mid-bite to smile crookedly.
Do you mean was I always this awesome?
I mean this. Katie waved her fork at Cassidy. Were you prancing around the halls of your high school wearing custom suits and hitting on girls in the locker room?
Not exactly. It wasn't until college that this...
Cassidy waved her own fork at herself as Katie had done. Happened. She could pinpoint it to an exact moment, actually, during her first week at NYU, when she'd been walking along Broome Street, and that woman crossed in front of her. That woman who would never know the profound effect she had on young Cassidy's future. Like Cassidy, she was tall and slim with broad shoulders. She had the same dark hair, but hers was cut short, and she wore a crisp dress shirt with a light scarf that flew behind her in the breeze. When she stepped to the corner and raised her hand to hail a cab, Cassidy quickly pulled out her phone and snapped a photo. At the time, Cassidy couldn't say why, but she studied the photo for a long while, right there on the street. There was something about this stranger that she had the urge to memorize. She didn't look like a woman, exactly, and she didn't look like a man, but she looked good. Cassidy continued on, dazed, not entirely sure where she was going, until she found herself in front of a salon window. Through its slick glass, everyone inside looked like a model or an actress. But intimidating as this was, she forced herself to enter and approach the receptionist. "Do you take walk-ins?" Cassidy had asked, having never hated her dark ponytail more than she did in that moment. The skinny giraffe of a woman scoffed.
"We schedule 3 months out."
But the tattooed woman behind her looked up.
"I just had a cancellation. Have you been here before?"
"No."
Cassidy held up her phone with a picture of the stranger. "But can you give me this haircut?
I have money."
The tattooed woman squinted at the phone, then back at Cassidy.
"Hot," she said. "Come on, let's get you washed."
The haircut turned out to be an outrageous $300, but Cassidy considered it worth every penny, especially because she used her parents' credit card to pay for it. Back on the street, she found herself newly capable of keeping her head up while she walked, a trait of contention her mother would have gladly forked over $300 to see corrected. She checked her reflection in every storefront she passed, reassessing herself from the neck down, her baggy hoodie, loose jeans, and torn-up Converse. She paused on the corner of Broome and Mercer, bowled over by the yearning to shop for new clothes. She could almost hear her mother's incredulity in her ear.
"But you hate shopping, Cassidy! You hate clothes!"
"No." Young Cassidy observed the stylish panorama of well-groomed men wearing jackets and ties and tailored pants with superb chic. She didn't hate clothes. She hated clothes for girls. Katie forked the last shrimp from their two-tiered plate and dipped it in cocktail sauce.
Were you straight before college?
Cassidy hesitated, and Katie set down her fork.
Sorry, maybe that was rude to ask. I didn't mean to pry.
Not at all.
Cassidy wiped her mouth with her napkin.
I was just trying to think of the right answer.
She gestured to their waitress for more wine.
I brought a girl home for the first time Thanksgiving of freshman year. Though I should clarify that by home for Thanksgiving, I mean I brought a girl to the uptown restaurant where my parents rented a room each year to host the holiday.
Only in New York, Katie said.
Exactly. Stodgy venue, catered menu, and the enigmatic roster of my parents' friends who are a mix of doctors and artists.
Their wine glasses were refilled as Cassidy continued.
When I arrived at the restaurant holding hands with this girl, I was wearing a sport coat, a button-down, designer jeans, and dress shoes, all from the men's department at Barney's. As expected, my mother gasped at the sight of me. I'd always been a tomboy, but I'd never actually worn men's clothes before. And on top of that, I'd chopped off all my hair.
Katie interrupted Cassidy there.
And you didn't feel you should have given your folks the heads up about any of that before showing up?
Nope. I just said, "Hi, Mom and Dad. I'd like you to meet my girlfriend, Jen."
So what did your parents do?
My mother took me aside and said, "So was this your way of coming out to us?" Then she softened and said, "Jen seems like a very nice girl." I said, "She is." She said, "And very pretty." I said, "I know." Then she said, "I just don't understand why you can't let yourself look more like her. She wears dresses and makeup."
Cassidy looked straight into Katie's eyes, then to read her expression, unsure if she'd absorbed her meaning.
"So the gay thing was fine," Cassidy said. "It was my clothes she couldn't get past."
"Huh," Katie said. "That's interesting."
Cassidy reached for her wine glass. In her experience, when someone said something was interesting, it meant she'd somehow freaked them the hell out.
"Something tells me your path to adulthood went a little smoother than mine," Cassidy said, eager to change the subject. "Maybe because I saw all those old photos of you on your fridge. Your family looks..."
Katie fiddled with her cloth napkin. Had it been paper, it may have been torn to shreds.
"Let's just say our Thanksgivings are all about turkey, stuffing, and football."
"Women cooking in the kitchen," Cassidy said. "Boys on the couch watching TV."
Katie's face shot up.
"Excuse me?"
"I'm not passing judgment."
"It sure sounds like you are."
"I'm sorry."
Cassidy tried to backpedal.
"You're right. Maybe that's not at all how it was at your house."
Katie cracked a smile.
"Actually, that's exactly what it's like in my house, but that still doesn't give you the right to be uppity about it."
"It doesn't drive you nuts, though?" Cassidy said. "That double standard?"
"So what you're saying is..."
Katie leaned in and rested her hand on top of Cassidy's. "You're the way you are because you hate doing dishes?" Cassidy had to laugh.
"You might be onto something."
Their plates were cleared, the disaster remnants of their feast cleaned away. In the heat of discussion, one of them had blown out their table's candle, but Cassidy hadn't noticed until their waitress relit it. The wall of quotations behind Katie flickered like a nervous poem. Katie may have been the most traditional girl that Cassidy had ever sat down to a meal with. She radiated obedience, but instead of finding this off-putting, it only drew in Cassidy more. How rare to encounter someone so classic and authentic, so timeless.
"I enjoyed college. Had lots of friends."
Katie swirled her wine.
"Not like now. I got lazy about friendships after Paul Michael. His friends became mine, and now I'm paying for it. I lost my entire friend group in one fell swoop.
Cassidy was already calculating ways to prolong the life of their meal when their waitress set down a giant piece of molten chocolate cake and two forks. Hallelujah, Cassidy thought, even as she pushed the plate closer to Katie.
I'm not really one for desserts.
Neither am I, Katie said. But one bite couldn't hurt. They wouldn't want to anger Raquel.
She handed Cassidy one of the forks and dug into the cake with the other.
God, that is good.
Cassidy surrendered, forked herself a bite, and then said with as much levity as she could muster,
Since you don't have any other friends to meet up with tonight, why don't you come out to the scene after this? That's where I'm headed.
Tempting, Katie said, but I think I'll pass.
But you're tempted.
I'm more tired than tempted, Katie said.
I'll order us some espresso.
Katie smiled politely, and Cassidy understood she was pushing too hard.
I should head home.
Katie reached for her bag. Can we get the check?
No, Cassidy said. It's on me. It'll only come to like $5, so don't worry about it. But I am going to pop into the kitchen to say thanks.
Katie stood up. This was fun. We should do it again.
Cassidy reached for her suit jacket from the back of her chair.
Yeah? You're not just teasing me?
I might be, Katie said.
Cassidy tried not to linger on the hint of flirtation in those final words as she watched Katie walk out of the restaurant. Instead, she tossed a breath mint into her mouth and made her way to the kitchen. Raquel was in the middle of scolding a line cook for dicing an onion that should have been minced. When she noticed Cassidy, she came right over.
I see you're back into straight girls, she said. Is this one married like the last one?
Cassidy took the hit.
I just came to say thanks for the fine treatment. I should have warned that poor girl.
Raquel moved in closer than she needed to be. Cassidy could smell the sweat and stock on her skin, and it made her hungry all over again.
It's not like that, Cassidy said. She's just a friend from work.
Mm-hmm,
Raquel said. She still hadn't moved away. Cassidy could feel the sous chef and line cooks looking on.
What time are you getting out of here tonight? Cassidy asked.
You wish.
Raquel shook her head and returned to the faulty onions. Cassidy left a stack of 20s on the counter before making her exit.
Chapter 7
Katie decided to walk the 20 minutes home. Buzzed and energized and full of chocolate and mercury, part of her wished she had gone with Cassidy to whatever hellhole she was off to, just so she could keep moving. Cassidy could come on strong, that was for sure, but Katie found Cassidy's self-assuredness and even her occasional obnoxiousness intriguing. She seemed to really know how to live, to always know what she wanted. Katie could have learned a thing or two from the way Cassidy conducted herself. Katie thought back to her first date with Paul Michael, when he took her to the opera, the real opera, the one Katie had grown up seeing in movies and on television. Before the show, Paul Michael ordered them French wine at the concession stand, using the correct pronunciation. And it dawned on her all at once just how much she could learn from this man.
Thank you. She remembered saying, conscious to not draw out the you
when Paul Michael handed her that $20 glass of opera wine. Katie walked along West 4th Street. The night was cool and moonlit. Rowdy groups of 20-somethings, not so much younger than her, ran circles around her tense business suit. NYU kids, most likely, fresh on the new school year. Along Washington Square Park, she passed a group of young men, drumming on buckets. She wanted to join them, to bang on something, too. She wanted to dance. Would she ever hang out with Cassidy again? Maybe. Probably, in fact.
Why the heck not? Cassidy apparently had an inn at every female-run restaurant in town. Entering her lonely apartment killed some, but not all, of Katie's exhilaration. She was still restless as she changed into a t-shirt and sweatpants, and fidgety as she flipped through the TV channels. She settled on a crime show where some girl had gone and gotten herself kidnapped, and now a bunch of men had to find her, but she couldn't focus on it. Katie felt strange, first on her walk home and now here again, like her bodily senses had all been shaken awake, and she couldn't get them back to sleep. It was possible she was nervous, but what about? She tried lying down, then sat back up, shifted her legs. There wasn't really any question that what she felt was aroused. Nothing about this procedural drama she was watching was the least bit stimulating, and yet somewhere within her there was a heat, a throbbing that would not quit. She really needed to get out more if this was what happened when she went someplace new, had a little fun. Katie brought her computer onto her lap. She would go on a date, a real date, even though she barely knew how because she'd hardly ever done it. Everything Katie knew about adult dating she'd learned from that homewrecker, Amy. Still, it would be enough to get by. Katie was well-versed in the various apps, but from witnessing Amy's constant swiping left and right, the idea of subjecting herself to that made Katie's stomach ache. An old-fashioned website seemed more appropriate if a proper date was what she was after, and she remembered the importance of choosing a site that charged a fee in order to filter out the riffraff. She located one, and the online form seemed easy enough to work through. I am a woman seeking a man between ages 25 and 35. Hold on. Best to be as specific as possible. She changed it to between ages 28 and 33. Near zip code 10014. Your height 5'9". Your hair color blonde. Your eye color blue. Your body type athletic. Your best feature? Do you smoke? No. How often do you drink? Lately? About me and what I'm looking for. Katie thought hard about this one. What did she honestly want? This was her chance to get it right. I want to get over my ex, she wrote, and then deleted it. I want to fall in love, she wrote instead, and then deleted that. She just didn't know. How could she not know? About me and what I'm looking for. Katie wrote, I want to have some fun. That seemed vague enough to get somebody's attention, didn't it? Katie had not imagined that she would wake up to an inbox full of winks and messages and offers of intercourse, but this was exactly the case as she sat at her kitchen table with a cup of coffee and scrolled through her many virtual suitors. It was a mixed bag. From Polly in Bay Ridge, who expressed interest in fucking her so hard, to Mike in Crown Heights, who expressed interest in fucking her so hard, to David in Midtown, who expressed interest in fucking her so hard. At this rate, she would have to grow another few holes just to keep up with it all. So much for the site's paywall working as a filter against losers. Then Katie struck upon Jeremy and Chelsea, a good-looking, brown-haired, brown-eyed, 6-foot-tall finance professional who enjoyed cycling, playing basketball, and going to nice restaurants. He did not express explicit interest in fucking Katie so hard, but implied that he wouldn't be opposed to doing so. He complimented her photos and asked her out straight away. The tone of his message was measured but confident, and not a direct threat to any of her body parts, so she messaged him back something equally measured and confident, with a little flirtation added in for good measure. Just when Katie arrived at her office, she got a message back from him. Are you free Saturday night by any chance? She wrote back, by chance I am. Great, I'll make a reservation for 8 p.m. Sound good?
Katie didn't really know how to do this online dating thing, but she got the immediate impression that there wasn't much conversation involved. So all she wrote back was, "Great." Then she tried to calculate how much time she had to get herself up to snuff. Maybe a new dress, a mani-pedi, a wax. Not necessarily in that order. The wax probably needed to be prioritized. Of course, Katie couldn't get appointments at any of her regular places for these services, because she chose to live in a city where you had to buy movie tickets a week in advance. So the next evening after work, she found herself at a random corner spa that was probably a money laundering front. An angry-faced stranger was shredding her nether regions when her cell phone pinged. Katie froze at the sight of Cassidy's name. "Had fun at dinner," she'd written. "Let me know if you're around this weekend." "Ow!"
"Sorry,"
Katie's angry-faced torturer said, but she did not seem very sincere. Katie ignored Cassidy's text and switched her phone to silent. By the time she left her apartment to meet up with Jeremy, Katie was bare and smooth and feeling confident in her new cobalt blue wrap dress that made her eyes pop like she'd insta-filtered herself with X-Pro 2. Jeremy was waiting outside the restaurant for her when she arrived, which she thought very gentlemanly. He recognized her right away and went in for a peck on the cheek. "So far, so good." Katie had been concerned Jeremy might look older, balder, shorter, and overall less attractive than he did in his photos. But for the most part, his full head of brown hair appeared the same as it did in that photo of him on his mountain bike, and he seemed to be a legitimate 6 feet tall. She checked out his shoes. They were brown leather derbies, clean and unscuffed, appropriate with his dark navy jeans and dress shirt. Not bad, she thought. Not bad at all. He'd chosen Salinas, an ideal date restaurant thanks to its sexy atmosphere and flattering lighting. They were seated in the back garden, which had a retractable glass roof and a stone fireplace. They ordered wine and tapas and got to talking about themselves. Katie couldn't find anything seriously wrong with this guy. He did brag about himself a little too much. But mostly he was doing his best to impress her, and not stare too much at her plunging neckline. Overall, Jeremy was a catch, and yet, as dinner proceeded, Katie couldn't help but notice that she was kind of bored when he went on about his recent trip to Rwanda.
"It isn't for everyone," he said, "hiking through rainforests, scaling mountains with slopes you wouldn't believe. But to have the opportunity to look directly into the eyes of a mountain gorilla and to see how expressive they are, it made me question what it even means to be human."
It was all Katie could do to not fall asleep in her rose tapato. To Jeremy's credit, he caught on that anthropomorphism was not the most efficient route to her heart, so he quickly transitioned to his job. How hard he worked. How much responsibility he had, how many millions of dollars of other people's money he was responsible for. Standard investment banker banter.
"So what kind of law do you practice?" he asked her finally.
"I'm at Dorchester Nevins Dunn," Katie said, "in structured finance."
Jeremy recalculated something in his mind and then smiled.
"So does this mean you're gonna bill me by the hour for this date?"
Katie forced a laugh because he was trying. It wasn't his fault that this felt like a job interview. She was just out of practice. She could tell by the flush to his face that he liked her. And once he learned that Katie wasn't some public defender with big dreams or wide-eyed counsel to a nonprofit, he seemed to recognize that she wasn't so fragile, that he didn't have to be too careful with her, and his best behavior could go right out the window with his sensitive guy's Rwandan gorilla trek. He flipped on the switch to his alpha male. Their waiter presented them with the postres menu, and Jeremy didn't bother looking at his.
"My apartment is really close to here," he said. "Just 2 blocks away."
Katie looked up from her menu.
Is it?
Smooth, she thought. Real smooth.
Wanna skip postres?
He asked. Was that any way to ask a lady to go to bed with you? But then again, why not? She was trying to try new things. That's what this whole night was about. Just like that, they were in Jeremy's living room, making out like animals. Animals with zero to offer on what it meant to be human. Animals that were eating each other's faces. He unbuttoned his clean-cut dress shirt, and Katie was pleasantly taken aback by the Clark Kent surprise of his cut chest and abs.
"Do you have a condom?" she asked.
He nodded, scrambled to his nightstand, and they moved to his bed. This was what she wanted, she told herself, as Jeremy slid off her dress. This was what she came here for. He climbed on top of her, and she closed her eyes. This man was a stranger. This stranger was about to be inside her.
Stop! I'm sorry.
She shoved Jeremy off her. He sat up, sweating, breathing hard.
What's the matter?
I'm sorry. This isn't me.
She sprang up from the bed and scrambled for her shoes.
Wait, you're leaving? Did I do something wrong?
Not at all.
She wiggled her dress back on.
This was all my fault.
He moved to get up, wrapping the sheets around his waist.
No, stay,
Katie said, extending her arm as if to shield herself.
I'll let myself out.
She couldn't get away from Jeremy fast enough. Out on the street, she power-walked down Ninth Avenue like she just escaped a burning building that she herself had set on fire. Her mind started spinning, and before she could stop it from happening, she became a girl in a slutty dress marching down the street while crying. She had to sit down on a cement slab in front of an abandoned construction site to catch her breath. What the hell was happening to her? Something felt seriously and perhaps medically wrong. She needed to call someone, a friend. She took out her phone and started scrolling, but there was no one. She was having a nervous breakdown, hyperventilating, and there was no one. The only recent activity on her phone was that text from Cassidy, which she'd never responded to. She wished she hadn't ignored it, now that going home alone might result in a 911 call and an ambulance ride to Bellevue. Did Bellevue still exist? It was possible that even a famed mental hospital would fail her in her hour of need. She started to text Cassidy, "I need help." But she'd only typed, "I need," when she accidentally hit send, forcing her to compose a second text of only, "Help," which appeared even more pathetic and alarming as a standalone word. Which meant she had to send a third text to try to sound less nuts.
I can't go home. Are you out?
Cassidy, bless her heart, wrote back right away. Where are you? Katie began to write construction site, but thought it better to just give her cross streets. Her phone suddenly rang, and she got so startled she nearly dropped it into a pile of rusted scaffolding pipe.
Hello?
Cassidy's voice was on the other end of the line.
Katie, what's going on?
Oh, nothing. I just...
You don't sound so good, she said.
And that was probably because Katie had started to cry again.
Did something happen? Cassidy asked.
I don't know. I was at dinner and then this guy's apartment and now I'm on the street. Ninth Avenue, I think, in Chelsea.
Listen, Cassidy said. You're 5 minutes from my apartment. I'll text you the address, okay? The doorman will let you up. I'll be there in 15 minutes, tops.
Will you really?
Katie choked the words out through her sobby throat.
I'll meet you there in 15, Cassidy said. I promise.
Will they seriously let me in without you there?
Yeah, just ask for Brandon if you have a problem.
They hung up, and Cassidy's text came through with her address. It was possible that Katie's nervous breakdown was simply a panic attack, because she felt calmer already, just knowing that she had some place to go and someone to talk to. In a few short blocks, her breathing returned to normal, and she was in front of Cassidy's building, and holy shit, was this really where Cassidy lived? It was that crazy blue glass building on West 18th that curved like a curtain blowing in the wind. Katie entered like she wasn't a madwoman who just cried off all her eye makeup and approached the concierge. "Excuse me," she said. "Are you Brandon?"
"I'm Frank. Brandon's not here, but how can I help you?"
"I'm a friend of Cassidy Price's. She'll be here in a few minutes, but she told me to ask to be led up to her apartment." He nodded like this was a regular thing, took a quick look at Katie's driver's license, then went to get a key from somewhere. Frank accompanied Katie to the elevator and up the many floors to Cassidy's apartment.
"Here we are,"
he said, unlocking her door, swinging it open, and clicking on the lights.
"Can I help you with anything else?"
Whoa, this was the most beautiful and gigantic apartment Katie had ever seen. Paul Michael would have soiled himself over the design of the place.
"No, I'm good, thanks," she said, walking across the vast living room floor in a half-hypnotized state.
Frank left, closing the door behind him, and Katie did a 180 to take it all in. The panoramic views of Manhattan, the Hudson River, and the High Line. There was a certain masculinity to the place and the way it was decorated. Lots of sleek black and rich browns in the living room, stainless steel and walnut wood in the kitchen. If she didn't know better, she would have guessed this place belonged to a man who was single and possibly Bruce Wayne. The bathroom was even more spectacular than she was anticipating. Marble countertops, a limestone floor, a glassed-in shower with one of those crazy shower heads that rain down on you like actual rain. She couldn't help but notice Cassidy's products around the sink. Hair tonics and creams in dark bottles and circular metal tins. Moisturizers and lotions with foreign labels. Not a pink razor to be found. No lipstick tubes or blush brushes. Katie knew it was wrong, but she had to inspect the bedroom. This was like being left unattended on the best HGTV episode of all time. How could she not check out the bedroom? Like the rest of the place, it was sparsely but impeccably decorated, immaculate to the point of being almost scary. The centerpiece was a walk-in closet that would have made Carrie Bradshaw swoon, except that it was filled with only dark suits, crisp dress shirts, and men's shoes. Where did Cassidy keep her non-work clothes? Katie opened the top drawer of her dresser, and eek, men's briefs? She slammed the drawer shut and suddenly felt sick. She rushed back to the living room. Maybe she should go. Maybe this was a mistake. Just then, she heard a key in the door. She sat down on the leather sofa as Cassidy stepped inside.
Chapter 8.
It was only around 11 p.m., but Cassidy was lit. She couldn't recall the name of the girl she was sucking face with up against the bathroom wall at Metropolis. Layla, was it? Or Lena? Or Lainey? What did it matter? She tugged at Cassidy's belt buckle as they stumbled into the doorless stall designated for this exact purpose. The important part was that Cassidy was feeling no pain. She remembered nothing of her day, her week, her life. If the girl's name was collateral damage, so be it. Cassidy went at her neck, unbuttoned her blouse. Everything was vibrating. No, not everything, Cassidy realized. It was her pocket. The vibration was coming from her phone, not her insides. Cassidy hadn't been thinking about Katie. She had very specifically not been thinking about Katie since she'd texted her to say she'd enjoyed their dinner and got no reply. But still, she had to take out her phone and look. There was Katie's name staring back at her. "I need," Katie had written.